Hello and welcome, everybody. Welcome to the CPE Today podcast. Today, we've got a special treat for you. This is the CES 2021 Tech Table Roundtable. Tech Trends Roundtable. Try saying that three times fast. Today's presentation is going to be looking at some of the major technology announcements and products and services that were released at this year's Consumer Electronics Show, normally held in Las Vegas every year. This was the first time it was ever held online. And I'm joined today by three colleagues and friends, Randy Johnson, Ward Blatch, Brian Tankersley, to discuss essentially some of the major things that came from that presentation and came from that virtual conference. A lot of really interesting technology is released every year at CES. And this is the first time that people were not able to gather in mass. And still a lot of that presentation was actually done, even though the people weren't able to get together. And so these three colleagues of mine, I'll give them a second to introduce themselves here in a moment, have attended for years. And they're going to give us their insight and their experience as it relates to this year's event. Now, I do want to remind you, this podcast is eligible for CPE credit. If you're a financial professional, and hopefully you are, you probably need CPE credits to maintain your license. You should know that this podcast can earn you one CPE credit. Check out cpetoday.com, use course code PRC8, and take a short 5-question exam related to today's content and today's podcast and earn yourself a credit for today's class. In addition to purchasing of the course, you also receive a DRM-free copy of the presentation today, the learning materials. You also get the ability to ask questions as well as access to additional resources and other really cool things. Okay, so we are joined today again by Randy Johnston, Ward Blatch, and Brian Tankersley, longtime technology aficionados, K2 instructors, both in the United States and Canada. I'm going to go ahead and switch it over to them and give them an opportunity to say hello, introduce themselves, and we're going to dive right into our presentation and content for today. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming. Thank you so much for attending. We appreciate your time and attention for today. I just want to give you a second to say hello, introduce yourselves. Ward, why don't you go ahead and say hello to everybody and tell us where you're at and your experience with CES.
Hello, everybody. Glad to be here today. Thank you very much for inviting me, Steve. I have only been to CES twice, once live and once virtual. I'm not a long-term attendee like Brian and Randy are, so their comments will be a little bit different than mine, I'm sure. And I'm in Nova Scotia, Canada.
All right. Well, welcome, Warden, and thank you for representing our Canadian audiences. We appreciate that. Randy, want to say hello?
Well, good day to you all. And Steve, likewise, thanks for having us along. I'm out of Hutchinson, Kansas, have done technology for over 50 years at this point, and have attended all the big computer shows traditionally, including Comdex and CES. Brian and I missed all our steps this year. That's one thing I'll have to say on a virtual conference. We were able to see some great content. We're happy to share at least some insights on you. You'll figure out pretty quickly we're practical. How's this stuff really work, either in the accounting profession or in business? And yet we still like some of the, you know, bright lights and shiny, you know, shiny lights and bells and whistles and all that other stuff too. But in any case, the event was quite different. You could not interact with the vendors as much depth as I prefer, because a lot of times you get to meet the engineers and the designers of these products, and you get asked some really deep questions, unless they figure out you're from the press, with both Brian and Mr. Press, then they tend you over to a PR person and you don't learn as much. But when you meet the founder and CEOs of the company and the heavy duty techs, it's a fine thing.
Yeah. All right. So I'm Brian Tankersley. I live in Knoxville, Tennessee. I have been an accounting tech consultant for over 20 years. Been with K2 since 2005. I've also done a lot of writing for CPA Practice Advisor and Accounting Web. And actually, I do with Randy a podcast that's going to be launching in about a week through CPA Practice Advisor called The Technology Lab. So, you know, again, if I can help you, don't hesitate to reach out. I'm Brian at K2E.com.
Perfect. Very cool. That's really interesting about the podcast, and good luck with that. It's been about a month or so since I started with this, and it's kind of fun being able to put out content very regularly and you know, reach different audiences. You know, COVID has changed the world, you know, for better or worse, and probably permanently in some respects. So I think this is a medium I think a lot of our attendees will probably want to engage with us on. So,
yep, understand. In fact, Steve, you'll appreciate that. I think I did my first podcast back in 1994.
Okay. Okay. Yeah,
that kind of goes back, but that's you. You'll see me pull out some wild stuff like that on you every once in a while.
That's pre-iPod, isn't it?
Well, it was a it was a podcast, but it was on a reel to reel, Brian. You know, so
you got a cassette in the mail, eh?
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, I think probably between the three of you, you know, it represents an insurmountable and a massive amount of technical ability and competency with respect to technology and certainly in the context of financial professionals, accounting and others. And I'm sure you're going to be able to provide some really great insight with respect to where CES is going to be useful and the knowledge and the products and services released to our audiences. So let's go ahead and dive right into this. And Ward, my first question is for you. So the CES show, Consumer Electronics Show, is one of the largest technology events in the world, and it's been held continuously for a very long time, actually going back to 1967. You know, they've had some interruptions here or there. It's moved from New York. It's primarily home is in Las Vegas, although they do some smaller events throughout the world in other places. But Vegas is the, you know, it's the granddaddy of them all, if you will. And 2021 was the first time it was held online. And from your perspective, like, how was this different compared to, you know, the other times that you had attended? And, you know, maybe share with us maybe some of your favorite and least favorite parts of what CES was like online this year.
Oh, right. Gee, that's a lot of things all in one question. I guess the big thing for me is that I enjoyed the fact I didn't have to travel. And I enjoyed the fact I didn't have to hang out in big crowds or walk for days at a time on concrete, which I don't enjoy. But I've personally found the experience nowhere near as fantastic as the year before. The ability to walk through thousands of exhibitors and seeing those products, and as Randy indicated earlier, speaking with the inventors of it, it's really... That wasn't anywhere near the kind of experience we had this year. I mean, flipping through page after page after page of exhibitor lists, really, it's not something that's practical to do. I think they had over 2,000 exhibitors this year. So it wasn't something that was very practical. So I really missed that ability to walk down the halls and actually see the stuff, talk to those people. And the other, of course, big thing is I didn't get a chance to hang out with Brian and Randy and talk about tech for days on end. My wife doesn't get very excited talking about tech. And so in these days when I'm at home, basically talking to myself about tech, because no one else in the family is really that interested in it.
Have you tried the dog? My dog Winston loves hearing about Excel spreadsheets and database designs. Have you tried that one yet?
I don't have a dog. I do have a cat. And
even better.
Cat's name is Comet. And he does enjoy talking about tech. And he also enjoys watching, you know, great TV series like The Expanse or something like that. But
fair enough.
Yeah, his responses to my questions and comments are quite limited.
Fair enough. And Brian and Randy, I mean, I know you guys have been going for, I think, decades at this point. Maybe share some of the things that have changed over the years since you've been going, and what was this year like compared to prior years for you and your favorite and least favorite parts?
Well, you know, I've been going since 2011. And so since Randy's been going forever, you know, probably not 1967, but he's been going for a long time. But what I'll say is that, you know, I miss the face-to-face. My feet and ankles and knees are glad that I'm not walking, because I tracked it one year. I think we walk about 30 miles, because we literally walk the entire show and walk by every single booth. And it takes up all of the Vegas Convention Center. It takes up a good part of the Venetian and Palazzo and, you know, what's the other hotel that's in there? You know, but there's
Sands Convention Center.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's insane.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun every year. You always are surprised by what you learn that you didn't expect to learn. you know, I miss seeing people face to face, but like Ward, I don't miss getting herded around like sheep, you know, because you can't, I mean, even the, you know, I've gone as press most years, and even when you go as press, there, you know, there's 20,000 working press attending that show.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like there's an NBA game at capacity full of press people. So it gets pretty crazy, but it's a lot of fun. You know, the big events for me are actually a couple of ancillary things, one called PepCom and another called Showstoppers, but it's a valuable part of the year. And like Ward said, I enjoy hanging out with these guys, because we get a lot of stuff worked out that we want to do in conferences every year.
Yeah,
at the show.
Yeah. Yeah, I see so many components of the K2 Tech Update, which is an annual show with presentation put together by Randy and Brian. I feel that so much of that content is drawn from your experience at CES and the stuff that you see and the vendors you speak with, and you know, all those little hidden gems that that I think make a big difference in the work life for folks. You know,
yeah, come and from you that will show. See it this year, Steve, in that presentation as well. You know, mm-hmm. So. Like Brian just called out, PepCom and Showstoppers, wonderful, because we actually got to interact with the vendors more in those events than we did in the general show this year, like that. Number two, the keynotes were more production, more orchestrated, and mm-hmm. some of those were quite extraordinary. And you'll provide some of those links as a follow-up, I think,
of course,
podcast today. But that was good. Additionally, the electronic versions of the materials will be very helpful to us this year. But as Ward mentioned, you know, having to flip through one after another, when I did the evaluation for CES, I did mention that. On the other hand, I was hyper impressed that Microsoft in their Azure platform provided enough scale. There was very few incidents where the performance was not good enough. In other words, I was pretty pleased that, you know, everything kind of clicked along, and I've attended mm-hmm. lots of virtual events in the past 12 months where people log into the bloody site and, you know, they get cut off and all that stuff. We didn't have a lot of that. And, you know, there was, because the three of us were attending virtually, you know, Zoom-like, if you will, while watching the event, we were actually having side conversations. So it was easier to talk between us instead of over the din of the noise. And frankly, when it came time to eat, we got better food than we did in the stores. But, you know, bottom line to our listeners here, I will tell you that the pieces that we learned, we're going to share more with you here in just a minute, but there are still many things that I'm gelling, new strategies. And I think attending CES this year, again, changed my attitude about certain types of technologies that I'll present in 2021 and beyond.
Excellent. That's really good to hear, and great that the technology, all this worked out. I'm sure the event planners were holding their breath probably the entire time, just making sure that everything kind of worked out. So interesting, well, and appreciate your experience with that.
You know, we learned some interesting tricks about running two meeting platforms at the same time, because what we did is we had what were we doing? Teams meeting between the three of us, and then most of the other stuff was Zoom. So we were actually running that on my computer because I've got fiber, and then they were participating in there, and it actually worked remarkably good, I think.
Yep.
And I was running multiple at the same time. So, you know, our platform here and an alternate platform here. So when appropriate, I was attending two sessions at once, but I also know that psychologically and mentally, it doesn't matter what people think, they can actually only focus on and do one thing properly at once. But you know how you're kind of listening and that's like really boring and this is really interesting. So you let the boring one run and you got an interesting one, or they're mm-hmm. both boring. The one that hurts is when they're both interesting. You're thinking, oh man, and you got to choose one.
Did they make any of the recordings available from some of the keynotes or other presentations? Do you know if they're publicly
available? The whole thing's available until, yes, the 15th of the month.
Yeah, it's available for about another week. So it is okay. Entirely available is the way to think about it. And a lot of the specialty sessions, the Showstoppers and PepComs, they're available to registered press that way. And I've actually rewatched multiple things. You know, one of the things we're going to recommend to the listeners here today to watch is the cat video. Man, what a great video about technology for 30 minutes. And, you know, Brian, my, you know, heavy equipment trainer before he got into technology. He was like, that's pretty good. And of course, Ward, you know, is the one that said, hey, you can't miss that.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, how about this? Here's a question for you guys. And Brian, I'd love your thoughts on this. You know, CES has always had a really long-standing reputation for product releases. You know, over the years, everything from, you know, Sony releasing the CD player to Nintendo releasing the first really consumer viable and widely distributed entertainment center, the NES, to Oculus releasing the VR headset and beyond, you know, they've all been publicly announced and embraced at CES. And from each of you, but Brian, please go ahead and start us off here. What do you think was the biggest thing that was announced this year? You know, across all, not just business, but consumer, everything. What do you think was the biggest thing?
You know, I'm actually going to share a slide with you here. And this is, I'm going a little bit conventional, and I'm intentionally not picking the direct answer to it. I'm intentionally picking something a little bit controversial. But this is a set of glasses called the Lenovo Think Reality A3. And what it actually is it's augmented reality. It's smart glasses that are tethered to a PC. And you can see those screens popping up. That's actually what it does. It does augmented reality. It will do up to 5 1080p displays at the same time. And so you, as you move your head, you can see, you can look at different screens and focus on different screens. They say it's going to be up, it's going to be ready the second half of the year, which means we don't know if it's going to get done this year or not. Is that's what it means in CES speak. In CES speak, if they say it's shipping now, then it's shipping now. If they say it's shipping at the end of the first quarter, you might see it the first half of the year. If they say second half of the year, it's usually late third quarter or early fourth quarter at the earliest. And if they say it's shipping fourth quarter, they got no clue. Okay. But that's what this thing literally does. But it's, I think this is probably the most, I think in the long term, wow, this is going to be the most important thing. Because, you know, I think about my friend Seth Feinberg, that's my editor at Accounting Web. And, you know, he's got two kids and two adults trying to work from home in 1500 square feet in New York. And they're all trying to do stuff virtually. And with this, you know, you just put on your glasses and you're done.
Hey, you know what? It brings a new meaning to reach out and touch it, you know, like in terms of being out there and being able to get those spreadsheets or Photoshop or, I mean, any of these things. I mean, it's a whole new way of being able to engage with technology. So,
well, it's going to transform what I can do on planes, because I'll be able to flip my laptop flat where I can just type, and then I'll have on my glasses and I'll be able to have 3 or 4 monitors. So, man, I'm going to be able to crank some stuff out on the airplane, I think, with this.
Oh man, I remember working on planes once. It seems like so long ago.
Yeah, I know. It's back. I remember worrying about whether or not the Raptor dinosaurs were going to come rip my head off every time I got on them, you know, long time
ago. That's really cool. I mean, I think, you know, the augmented reality, virtual reality technologies have made such a big impact over the last couple of years and will continue. You know, I have a very, very dear friend of mine, who will be a guest on this podcast in the next month or two, Terry Shane, longtime technologist and would absolutely fit in well with this group of gentlemen here. But he's been really hot on the Oculus. And he was telling me that essentially Oculus has created this whole like virtual museum tour, you know, where you can go through and in COVID, you know, and go walk around the Louvre or go walk around the Met and, you know, just from the comfort of your home, not having to go out and travel and experience it. And he said it was actually quite good. You know, somebody who's been in multiple places and seen them both virtually as well as in person now, you know, that the experience was pretty good overall. And I think that technology is going to continue to grow and expand. And that's really cool. And did they have any idea of price point on that?
They didn't, but you know, if I'm looking at it, if it's $1,000, okay.
Yeah.
You know, because I mean, it, you know, you start thinking about that and that lets you take suboptimal work situations.
Yeah.
And you can literally carve, I'll bet I could carve out 2 or 3 days a year in a normal travel year where I can flat get some stuff done instead of trying to make things work on that small screen that I have in front of me on my laptop. So pretty excited about it.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a pretty good example. And as you were talking about Terry there, Steve, you know, our associate for a long time, Dr. Bob Spencer, also went to CES with us, but he's running Oculus as well. Good reports. And whenever Dr. Bob says good reports, I'm right with him on that. But I think, you know, if I picked my big thing of the year, it was, and I'm not an automotive CES attender, but I think what happened with General Motors with their battery packs reconfigurable in different configurations based on the chassis involved. The Mercedes Hyperscreen, that was really something else. The delivery van solution, which I think Brian's put up for you there with the containers and so forth. There was just some bloody impressive stuff that General Motors had done and Mercedes had done to take advantage of this new electric vehicle environment. And FedEx is running in prototype already the delivery system that you see pictured there, and they're getting ready for their second pilot this month. And the basic bottom line is pretty simple. Costs less to operate these than their traditional trucks. So the economics all pay out the way I would see it. So to me, that was kind of an aha. Plus, I attended sessions that neither Ward nor Brian did, which talked about some of the power distribution systems nationally, monitoring how to deliver the right power in the right place at the right time. And, you know, those engineers, they really explained what they were doing well. And it's like, okay, I don't know when this will come together, but I can see it's getting closer, and it could even work to the point that I had a discussion with my own wife saying, look, most of our drives are here to Wichita and back, which is about an hour drive. We could run electric the full way and be pretty happy. And then there was the discussion about what we'd have to have in our home and so on. But bottom line is commercial EV, that's a pretty big deal with this new bright drop technology.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more in terms of where electric cars are going to go. You know, it's such a huge shift in transportation, but an absolutely necessary one, and so many different fronts. You know, first and foremost, environmental concerns, but then you think about the economics of this as well. You know, it's not going to take much more for this to become very commercially viable.
If you think about it, Steve, you know, I'm a 5-liter Mustang driver. So, you know,
I know you are. Beautiful, I like bright green one.
Yeah. And I've accelerated with you in that before.
Yes.
GM was basically promoting their Hummer, you know, you know, goes 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. I mean, a friggin' Hummer, and it will crawl sideways.
Cool. Boy, and if you like off-road, you really, or you're interested in electric cars, you really need to watch that Hummer segment of Mary Barra's GM keynote, because it is absolutely unbelievable. I mean, 0 to 60 in 3 seconds.
And I'm thinking I can drive back to the airport. I mean, that'd be the car. And it's, you know, it snows in my part of the country. And, you know, it's like, hey, 4-wheel drive, 0 to 60 electric. Yeah.
And it'll drive at a 45 degree angle, so you can park it anywhere.
So you can hydroplane at 60 miles an hour.
Yeah. I think so. You know, being in Canada, the battery technology, you know, GM talked about some of their improvements in it. And I think we're still probably a year or two away before a battery can actually sustain a charge in colder temperatures or in hotter temperatures. Mm-hmm. So that's really, from my perspective, the roadblock, so to speak, of these electric vehicles. I'm excited to move to electric vehicles. You know, I've got a small backyard here. I can put in my solar panels to keep my car charged. But I need to be able to, you know, these 200 to 400 kilometer, I don't know what those are in miles, but who cares? That range is not quite long enough.
Yeah.
Right. We need to get it a little bit longer. We would need to, you know, for personal use, for delivery purposes in the city. I mean, I think we probably have sufficient size batteries. Those GM battery blocks, they're talking about, you know, upwards of 1,000 kilometers on a charge, with enough batteries on the bottom of one of those vans. So I think they've got that solved. It's just getting it down to scale to fit in our cars. Yeah. to get that to work. And for me, you know, I have to agree with Brian. I think those Think Reality A3 glasses were fantastic. I really can see it replacing monitors. I'm not sure if this first generation is going to be quite there with a 1080p resolution. But, you know, we have Apple talking about a 4K augmented reality headset. So that could be, you know, it's obvious we're going to get there. And I think it's a really good example of how things are dramatically going to change. The one that I was sort of interested in from the show was the Mojo AR contact lenses. These actually do give us the ability when we're looking around, if I come up to meet you, it would give me a little scorecard about who you are, what your name is, and other data. But lots of feedback driving down the road, whether we're on a bike or walking or hiking, you know, that information now right in your eye instead of having to look down to look at it on a screen that we have today. I mean, when we take that kind of technology, whether it be the Lenovo glasses or a contact lens, it really means that we can finally get computers down to a reasonable size, also known as a smartphone. And I think we're very close to then being at the point where that will be our computer, something that size or smaller, to give us that capability. So this technology for screens is really, I think, a big step forward.
Yeah, and you know, Ward, as you're saying that, you can see it, I'm a trifocal wearer, but, you know, I'm one of the original glass holes. Yeah, because I got the Google Glass and I wore them. And I actually had great success because, yeah, it looked geeky, but the display was good enough and it augmented things that I was doing. I thought it was worthwhile. Of course, Google's done their second generation. And like you just mentioned with Apple and all these other players, I think these are going to be viable commercial products here. And so, you know, we usually have to get to the third generation of anything. And so, you know, Google's in their second and, you know, so is it this year? Maybe, maybe not, but it isn't far off. And that's what we want you to learn from our time together today. These heads up devices, I think, have real merit and you should be watching them.
Yeah. Excellent. And I'll just put a stake in the ground that if they come out and it's $1,000 or less, I'm probably going to buy one no matter what, just because it looks so interesting. You know, and it gives me the opportunity, and I think it gives anybody, all of us that travel much, the opportunity to really claim back a significant amount of time. I mean, I can make the ROI on that make sense real fast.
Well, let's face it, Brian, it's a heck of a lot better than your $1,500 iPhone.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks. Cool. Yeah. Thanks, Tim Cook.
Yeah. I also think for remote working, you know, whether you're at your home or, you know, wherever it is, I mean, you're talking about being on a plane, but if I could be sitting in my home office, AKA the kitchen, and have five monitors in front of me instantly, just slotting a pair of glasses on, I mean, that really can change the efficiency of all of these people that are working from home. And I don't see us going back to offices. Definitely, it'll never be like it was before. So any technology in my mind that can improve that vision of work, multiple pieces of information simultaneously, key to me.
Very cool. Very cool, guys. And I think that technology is going to get smaller and sharper and more user-friendly. And hopefully the battery life for these things go through the roof. And that's probably a good segue into our first review question for our podcast. And again, as a reminder to our financial professionals that are listening, if you're a CPA, if you're a somebody else working inside of finance, you're subject to continuing education, as a reminder, this podcast is eligible for CPE credit. Go to cpetoday.com, use course code PRC8, take a short 5-question exam and earn a credit for listening today. All right. So we do have a review question, and let's test your knowledge for our three panelists here and see what you guys think. Okay. What is the current highest resolution TV or monitor commercially available in North America? Is it 1080p? Is it 4K, 8K, or 100K? What do you guys think?
Well, I'm going to cheat on this one because I love the doggone TVs. And I have to tell you, at CES in 2020, you know, I drug Ward and Brian over to the 4K, 8K monitors. And, you know, Ward actually, I will always remember his response saying, that 4K is worth it. But we also saw 8 and 16K monitors in 2020. So it is time, even though it is before the content is readily available, to get 8K, which is the best and correct answer here. All of the 8K units are doing upscaling. There's a lot of technology behind it. We could talk about projection and lots of other things, but you know, in the form of this video podcast, it's a little hard for you to see the screens and so forth. But
well, I actually have a slide on 8K I can share with you that maybe you could talk to, Randy.
Absolutely. Let me go ahead and stop my sharing. You go ahead, sure. Brian, share right, it with
so,
us.
So here is my slide on 8K. And the real advantage here is that you don't have to pick just one game. You know, you could literally go through here and I could watch six, I could have six football games, six hockey games, six baseball games, all going on at the same time in here. Samsung actually will let you go up to 12 games at once. Now, again, that assumes your cable will handle that. Other thing we saw with 8K TVs is this bottom part where we actually have these frames. And so, you know, my wife doesn't feel like a room in your home should be dedicated to television. You know, that just bugs her as an art history major. And so as we look at this now, this gives you the opportunity to have either art or family pictures or something else on a thin wall mounted TV. It's called the Frame from Samsung. And comes in different sizes, and you can basically use it as a television set, or you can use it as a frame.
And you know, that particular upgrade is good because Samsung pushed the wall in 2019 CES, and Brian and I took pictures, and it was phenomenal to see. And these monitors can kind of be clipped together to make them much bigger. So if you just start thinking about snap together monitors, which we saw at CES in 2020, and then realize that you can now do this with 8K monitors and just daisy chain as many up and down as you want, that's a good deal. Now, Brian, I'm really surprised you were talking about gaming here, because I figured you'd do Formula One in the big picture and cockpit view in the other five, but maybe I'm a little lost on here.
Now we're talking.
But yeah, you know, the yeah. net here is, if you just begin to realize that an 8K monitor will give you multiple high resolution views, you can run off of one monitor pretty effectively. And I think Ward, if I recall correctly, you're running a large monitor off your Surface right now. And, you know, basically instead of having multiple monitors, which is the way we started teaching people in the 90s to do this, 2, 3, 4 monitors, we're now with many, many big monitors. And our favorite monitor last year was the HP, you know, S34, but now you've got the Dell, Ultra Sharps and the new LGs, which are quite good, which Ward, I think, asked me about this week and.
Yeah. So the big monitors we're looking at now for those big ones are 49 inch, and it's basically the size of two 27 inch monitors as a continuous piece of silicon. Most of them have inputs on both sides so that you could actually have two different computers and a single keyboard video feed and mouse, and actually switch back and forth between them on the USB hub on the back.
So Ward, aren't you running a big monitor as your primary?
The monitor in front of me is a 75-inch display. It's only 4K. So that with the 4K, you know, if I scale it up too high, the it's not sharp enough. And I must say, I was, in 2020 when we were at CES, I was shocked, really completely shocked at what a fantastic job they do of upscaling that 4K content to 8K. 8K TVs are just a little out of my price range right now, but you know, the large screen makes it super easy to do something like this. I have, you know, five or six windows open, but they're all on the same display in front of me. And having that higher resolution makes these larger monitors close to us much more practical.
So you guys make me feel like a Luddite. I run all my screens at 1080p. I actually prefer lower resolution than higher resolution for the work that I do. You know, maybe it's just more detailed encoding and stuff like that. But
or you're too cheap to buy a good monitor.
Well, to be fair, though, I mean, you guys can't see this, but I have six monitors. I have two massive graphics cards powering over 1,000 inches of monitor real estate, as I refer to it. But I've always preferred more monitors as lower resolution, mostly because I can separate them. Like I do, I run a 3 and a 3 and they're separated visually. And I find that actually.
Yeah. So what I find, though, is the 1080p monitors are not... the image is nowhere near as good.
No, you're right.
So if you can, if you were running 4K monitors, well, you couldn't run that many monitors 4K video cards you have. But if you could run those and then upscale it, you'd have the same size print so you can read it, because I noticed you haven't started wearing glasses yet.
Contacts.
But
contacts.
It would be so much
smart contacts.
Okay. It would be so much sharper. That I really find, you know, for myself, I my other desk, I sit in front of 3 1080p displays, and it's a bit annoying because it is not nearly as sharp.
Yeah.
I really notice it when I go from the setup I have here to that setup, to go from 1080p, you know, from 4K down to 1080p, it's not good.
So, but Steve, there was still plenty of ergonomic stuff here at this year's CES, and we
saw
it last year, but I can tell you that, you know, as we're having this monitor discussion, if your eyes hurt at the end of the day or your shoulders hurt, you're on the wrong monitors and your setup is configured wrong. It's just that simple. Yep. And a lot of people just think it's part of working in front of a computer. And in general, the scan rates, the sharpness, the brightness, the black contrast and so forth, give me 4K any day. And I got to tell you, I waited for CES to make my 8K purchase. So Ward, we're going to have to get you to sell some of that Google stock or Bitcoin that you own just so you can get that new monitor. But you know, bottom line here, friends, is in your homes and in your offices, we usually talk about the things that you should be buying or planning to buy. And sometimes we'll buy them a little early. I mean, you heard Brian, he's absolutely going to buy those Lenovo glasses because we want to buy and try. You can't really believe what's written about these products in reviews. And until you try them, you just can't be sure. So, you know, I know a lot of you read these reviews thinking you're getting good information, maybe. But, you know, I usually read reviews to see what people think is going on versus reality. And then I try to figure it out. So
and I will say that that's the biggest loss of not being face to face at CES, is that we can't see and touch and experience this personally. So we have to go off of things, you know, like the 8K TVs. If we hadn't seen them last year, we'd have had no clue how great they were.
Yeah. Yeah. So not everything just translates through a virtual experience.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, again, I can't tell you because I was just waiting to bring Ward and Brian back because they're saying, it's not that big a deal. Not that big a deal. And I'm thinking, And you, again, their mouths just both wide open drop.
Yeah,
and, you know, they were just in awe. And we did look at all the different vendors, and that's how we decided last year who we would vote for in terms of being the better of the monitors. But I got to tell you, based on what I think Sony has done, they may have recaptured that lead spot, but I don't know for sure because we didn't physically get to see them. But the technical prowess and positioning and so forth tells me they probably did better. But, you know, if we start weighing Samsung, LG, Sony, and so forth, kind of hard to tell because it was virtual. And, you know, you can't go to a big box store and look at it because the lighting's wrong, the content's wrong, and everything's wrong. But I guess that's better than, you know, looking in an online store and trying to figure it out.
Yeah, on your 1080 display.
Well, I hear what you guys are saying, and I'm going to take it to heart. So I'm certainly going to look at that. And my partner, Alex, if he were here, he'd be hitting me on the side. He's a big fan of the ultra wides, especially the curved ones.
You know? Oh, yeah. Curved ultra wide. That's a great ticket. So
we got Alicia one upstairs. She loves it.
Well, that's good. Well, Mr. Luddite, I think you probably ask a question, don't you?
I do. So let's have another review question, and then we'll keep moving our discussion along here. But for our audience, guys, help us fill in. What is the current fastest Wi-Fi standard commercially available in North America? Is it Wi-Fi 4, Wi-Fi 5, Wi-Fi 6E, or Wi-Fi 8? And Brian, why don't you give us your thoughts on that?
Well, I happen to know the answer to this one because I've lived it, and I've actually got a slide on it here in a second, but it happens to be Wi-Fi 6E, and I'll actually show you here. I actually have a slide on it to show you how much faster it is.
Please.
So let's throw that one up there. And if you look at this now, first off, you remember the alphabet soup of Wi-Fi, you know, there's A, B, C, G, N, A, C, you know, and all those things. Well, they've given it a numbering scheme now. So Wi-Fi 4 is what used to be 802.11n. Wi-Fi 5 is 802.11ac. They both use the 2.4 gig spectrum and the 5 gig spectrum. And so between those two, you have about 575 megahertz of spectrum available. Okay. Wi-Fi 6E adds a bunch of new spectrum in the 6 gig spectrum, which is basically doubles the capacity of this. Mm-hmm. So now if I've got a mesh network, I can really move some stuff without cables around my house, you know, and you know, because I've got 1.1 gig of spectrum that I can work with, and the 2.4 gig and the 5 gig stuff is all messed up by microwave ovens and you know, cordless landline phones and all kinds of things like that, but this 6 gig is pretty much untouched by anybody. So there's some interesting, that's the interesting part about it is how much more bandwidth's available. I want to upgrade to Wi-Fi 6 at home, but I'm waiting on 6E because I want that extra, that basically the tripling of the bandwidth available, of the spectrum available when I upgrade.
And, you know, another fundamental issue around this, Steve, because again, I've been around since the earliest of the A's and B's on Wi-Fi, in fact, helped create a lot of that hardware early on. So that was a real pleasure to work with some real wireheads doing that. But WPA3 is the other magic to Wi-Fi 6 and Wi-Fi 6E. See, we've never suggested that you should use any Wi-Fi on a public basis or even to a degree private basis unless you can get it encrypted, and you couldn't properly encrypt it until WPA3 became available, starting with Wi-Fi 6. So that's not completely resolved at this point, Steve. Mm-hmm. We're starting to see the deployment. And, you know, there's a couple of magic parts moving here because security continues to be an issue, and it is impossible. Notice my keywords, I select my words carefully and properly. Unique means one of a kind. It is impossible to secure our current IP4 based networks.
Yes, you're right.
And you have a shot at securing the IP6. So when we start talking about 5G and low Earth orbit and Wi-Fi 6E, these things are all IP6 based, and we got a bit of a shot there. But WPA3 gives us the ability to encrypt everything properly on the Wi-Fi. So for the first time ever, I'm going to suggest that it's okay to use Wi-Fi from a security perspective.
Yep. Yeah. And we're starting to see Wi-Fi even in mission critical facilities like hospitals and let's say really commercial viable efforts, you know, logistics carriers and things like this being not only used, but the primary method of networking now in a lot of these places.
Yeah, but
I think the work that's been done on mesh over the last few years really makes Wi-Fi 6E with WPA3 a completely 100% viable solution for networking in an office.
Yep. Yeah. But
remember, you have to have both endpoints.
Yep.
Yeah. So when it comes to that, that's really kind of a big deal as we see it here, because the whole Wi-Fi experience maybe is getting close enough that we don't have to have wired. And, you know, it's nice to have fiber connections and all those other things, but we've got friction throughout our internet system that we've got to knock out at this point. And Wi-Fi 6E is the magic on that. So Wi-Fi 6E mesh, I understand why Brian's standing by.
Yep. Yep. Randy, let me ask you another question with respect to products released in CES this year. Was there anything from a business perspective specifically? I mean, so much of CES focuses on consumer electronics, as is in the name, but so many major business things, you know, have been made their debut there as well. Did you see anything specifically that would be useful to our tax, accounting, and other financial professionals that might be listening this year?
Well, Steve, you've probably figured it out. I'll bet you Brian's going to have a slide on this, but my favorite accounting professional product of the year turned out to be a ViewSonic portable monitor. So what ViewSonic released was, at the couple of $100 price point, a touchscreen or a standard monitor. And this particular device is really super as far as I'm concerned. Now, there were two or three other things that I would say were also super.
Okay.
But
okay,
the flat screen portable monitors to carry with you, that's a great big deal. I'll let the other guys go, but I could give you 10, just bing, 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 bing.
I'm sure you can. Give
Ward and Brian a shot at these.
All right. For me, there was nothing really that stood out for me. Although I must say that, your selection of a monitor, I think, is appropriate. Particular with the pen support capabilities. I think now that we are paperless, because we've been forced to be paperless, that we really need to make sure that everybody has that digital pen capabilities to be able to very quickly mark up our documents, make comments, do edits and stuff. So really getting into digital ink, I think, is a big step. But the thing that sort of stood out for me the most was that I don't think we listened to one talk about product that didn't say AI or machine learning.
Yeah, those are huge.
And I think that that clearly shows to me that this has gone mainstream. And so when we're, as accountants, looking at solutions, we want to make sure that there is an AI component in there, because if we're not moving to products that have AI to be able to process documents automatically for us, file them automatically for us, post them in our accounting system automatically for us, put appropriate security on them based on wording, I think we're really going to find ourselves in big trouble. So to me, it was the overall vast amount of AI technologies in CES that really sort of struck me. I just couldn't get over how everybody said this.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Yep.
You know, absolutely. And I'd agree with you on the AI. I would just, one caution I would have is that I'm very uncomfortable with everybody saying they have AI when they don't. Mm-hmm. You know, there are a lot of offshore bookkeeping operations now that are saying they have AI when their artificial intelligence is actually a bunch of very real intelligence that happens to be in a developing country where they get paid less. So it's the same kind of outsourcing that happened with corporation, you know, with the Fortune 500 years ago. I will mention to you here that since I know many of you are germaphobes, these are two things that we found that we thought would be of interest to you, especially for those staff auditors you have, or for your office, you know, because the CPAs I know, you know, used hand sanitizer before it was cool. So one of them is this, on the left is a Targus UVC disinfecting light. They say it's going to be $299 and it'll be available second quarter. It is a UV disinfecting light that you put on your desk that only turns on when you're not there, because they don't want to mess up your eyes. So it does about 5 minutes an hour, but it'll disinfect your workstation. That's important for a lot of the big firms that we're working with. The other piece I'll say here is that, I'm sorry, I thought it was showing the right screen here. Okay, so here the thing is, there's your screen. And so you can see there's your Targus light on the left and then your backpack on the right. The backpack is antimicrobial. And again, we don't know a price on it. We think it's going to be $100 to $200, but we're not really sure about it. But there is some pretty interesting stuff there.
That's wonderful. And Brian, that kind of leads us into a question I had, and maybe you can respond a little bit on this as well. You know, COVID, without a doubt, has, you know, had this huge, massive impact in the world. And, you know, thankfully, I mean, if it had to have happened in 2020, thankfully it happened in 2020, you know, when we've got great collaboration tools like Microsoft Teams and Slack to be able to connect with our colleagues around the world. I mean, all of us have worked together for years and, you know, but I feel like we're much more collaborative now in kind of using these tools. We can connect, we can share screens. There's lots of great cloud tools like AWS, Azure, and others, you know, certainly from our partners at like Zoho or Centrum or Ace, you know, for a variety of firms. Anything new at CES to kind of help our attendees weather this COVID storm? Anything in particular pop up for you guys that you saw that would be helpful?
You know, I don't think there's ever a situation where you can't, where you don't benefit from having better, you know, putting your best face forward. So this Marantz Pro turret you see up here in the upper right, that's actually the device I'm using.
Cool.
It is a 1080p full high HD camera with a light ring around it. And then it's got a microphone with a pop screen in front of it, mm-hmm. On an arm that you plug in over a USB-C cable. It's $299, but I got to tell you, I had one of my CPA firm clients actually talk to me on his yesterday, and he swears by it. The key thing that I've found is that you need to put the monitor, you need to put the camera in between you and whatever you're looking at, so that you can cut or the pictures of the other people, so that you can maintain eye contact to the extent possible. But anyway, this is some of the stuff I had. What about you guys?
Well, you know, I'll pick up here because one insight since we've been Intel fans for so long, and we've said, look, new generation chips are coming with the M1 ARM chip for the Mac family, but the big deal was AMD. Man, were those guys lit. And it makes me understand why Lisa Su is the top paid CEO in the Fortune 500 for the last 2 years.
Wow.
Because AMD has it wired for sound. And when we start looking at these chip geometries and what their plans are and what they did in their keynotes explaining their technologies, and then I looked at the Intel ones and said, oh yeah, I can see why the CEO got replaced. You know, they had a wonderful lead that they've squandered. And, you know, I would tell you that Brian and I have talked enough that I think our next computers are going to be AMD now.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
We're going to make the jump to Ryzen's from Intel for lots of reasons. I mean, part of it is we want to test it and see that it's really right. But frankly, such a better price performer. So there's another one of the technologies, Steve. I mean, we tend to watch for mundane stuff, printers and scanners and so on. And by the way, there were quite a few new scanners that were covered as well. Ward probably might give us an insight on that. But you know, the bottom line here is the chip technology changed. And I think it will change the way we use our computers, desktops, laptops, phones in the not so distant future.
That's wonderful. Ward, what about you? Did you see anything with COVID related tech or anything, you know, kind of else that you're thinking that might be of interest to our listeners?
I think the first, I don't think this is a temporary position that we're in now. I believe this is a long-term change.
I agree. Yep.
And really, we've talked about Wi-Fi 6E quite a bit already, and we have mentioned 5G a bit, but those two technologies are going to give us that speed that we need, no matter where we are, to be able to work efficiently remotely. And if you think about all the things we've talked about so far, you know, those glasses from Lenovo, 6E, Wi-Fi 6E and 5G, and you know, the better processors with much better battery life because they're much better performance. It all leads to us to be able to work from anywhere and have all the same things that we had back at our old offices if you used to work in an office. So I think really that connectivity experience was a big thing for me.
Well, you know, Ward, as you were saying it, I was thinking you might go here, and none of us did, Steve. But, you know, as I think about just some other impressions from this, and in light of your COVID question, I was amazed how many touchless faucets, toilets, refrigerator, everything was, you didn't have to touch the bloody thing. And, you know, that was, as I think Brian said earlier, germaphobe territory.
Yeah.
But it makes sense because, you know, with the current spread of the new generation COVID variants, there's still doubt. In fact, you know, in the back of my mind, it's like, okay, how are these new variants getting in the U.S.? Are they coming in on surface shipments into the port of Charleston and the port in Maryland and so forth when they were first breaking out that way? I don't know. The scientists won't know for 4 or 5 years. Yep. But I can tell you that all of the vendors were very conscientious because their workforce had been upset so much and their development efforts were focused around this. A lot of products got to market. I think we'll see even more that are pandemic COVID friendly in the coming year.
Agreed.
Yeah, it was like some of that stuff they had with those UVC lighting systems, like little robots that go up and down the airplane to scan the whole thing between flights. I mean, just the speed that you can clean an area using that technology.
Yeah, or the hotel rooms. I mean, let's face it, all four of us have lived in more hotel rooms than we probably care. But think about that robot that went through and, you know, UV sanitized the hotel room.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I think one of the things we've got to be very careful about as a society is we've got a lot of hospitality workers that really haven't had reliable jobs for a long time. You know, I think about Randy's daughter and son-in-law that work in the theater in New York, and there's no theater happening, and there's very little video, you know, video production going on. And, you know, I think we have to work together with people and take some risks. As opposed to waiting for everything to be completely perfect. You know, we'll make some mistakes, but I think it's time for everybody to go back to work, you know, but hopefully we'll be able to. You know, my dad gets his second inoculation here in a couple of days. And I'm looking forward to being able to see him because he lives in assisted living. I haven't been able to see him except for 2 or 3 times the last year. And so, you know, I think, you know, it's been an interesting ride the last year or so, but I think there's a long way to go. And I think we've got to start getting uncomfortable again so we can get back to business.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a different year for us all. I know us, you know, the four of us have spent so much more time together in any normal year compared to this year. You know, and most of us haven't seen our friends, our family, you know, some of us, myself, you know, I was supposed to get married and have a wedding that obviously didn't happen. COVID took that. And, you know,
that's
hopefully
a lucky break, then.
I don't think so. I'm the luckiest guy in the world, you know?
Okay, good. Good.
Thank you. You know, but, you know, hopefully that, some of the technology coming out of COVID will help heal and we'll be able to grow past this and hopefully be able to get back to normal and back to business in the coming years. And it's good to hear that some of the disinfecting technologies and automation technologies and servicing technologies are starting to make their way out, because I know that'll be a huge change. And no matter what, I think a lot of that tech is here to stay. So, gentlemen, the hour has flown by. Let's go ahead and have our final review question here, and then we'll go ahead and wrap up and give me your thoughts on this. And Ward, how about you take this question? What year is General Motors, GM, expecting to make their entire automobile lineup electric? Is it 2025, 2035, 2050, or 2044?
Gee, that's a really tough question. Do you think they'll actually do that? If you include hydrogen, I would have to go with 2035.
Yes. Yeah. And that was also a big announcement coming out of CES and beyond too. They've elaborated on a little bit further, but interesting to see a whole manufacturer moving their entire lineup of vehicles electric. And I'm certainly encouraged by this. And the second I could buy a fully electric F-350 that can tow my trailers, I will be first in line. So, but like you, I live in cold weather. So I think they got to do a little bit of work on that cold weather tech to make that a really viable option for the rest of us.
Sure. Yeah.
All right.
So hydrogen might be your solution there. The other thing that electric cars gives us is some really fantastic dashboards. The stuff from Mercedes-Benz was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Single pane of glass across the front of your car to replace all of that junk you have there now. Really amazing stuff.
Well, gentlemen, this does bring us to the end of the hour. I just want to remind our audience here, this podcast is eligible for CPE credit. And if you are a financial professional, a CPA, or some other professional that is subject to continuing education, you can earn a credit for just listening to today's podcast and taking a short 5-question exam. Head on over to cpetoday.com, use course code PRC8. Take the exam, it'll take you 2 minutes, and you'll earn a credit for today's class. Easy peasy. Also coming up, we do have a number of other episodes coming out next week and beyond. We're going to have a second section of our integration data sharing for accountants, as well as starting a new series on disaster planning and business continuity. We're also going to take a look at some office productivity software, looking at some of the latest offerings from Office 365, Zoho, Google, Workspace, and others, as well as continuing our QuickBooks Online series with our next series going into intimately on some of the functions of QuickBooks and how you can properly leverage those in a small and medium-sized business. I do want to give a massive thank you to Brian, Randy, and Ward. Thank you so much for attending, guys. I really do appreciate you coming on the podcast today and sharing your thoughts with respect to CES 2021. Hopefully, you know, the COVID world will be resolved shortly and we'll be able to get back in person and maybe attend in person in Las Vegas in coming years. But really appreciate your time and consideration and feedback today. It's been greatly appreciated. So,
thank you. Good day to all.
Thanks.
Thank you, guys. Well, everybody, hope you all have a great rest of your day. Thank you so much for attending our podcast for today. Again, if you're interested in earning credit, check out cpetoday.com. Use course code PRC8. Take a short exam and you can go ahead and finish up. All right, guys. Thank you so much. Look forward to seeing you all soon. Take care.